Yeah.
I reposted it so you can look. I mean, cool. I just about died reading it.
Yeah, a lot of people. Well, folks, it's time again for another edition of Valley Edition. And I have here in the studio three panelists with considerable experience as we come into the last days of December 2016. I welcome Mark Kelsey. Mark, welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
I welcome Terry Snyder.
How you doing, Mike? Terry.
Yes, great. And sitting there with a smile on her face, Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hi, Mike. Good to be here.
Well, we are really at the last Valley Edition for the year, and it comes just before Christmas, and we have been looking back a bit at what's happened, whether it's in the previous week or the entire year, and I thought this session could take a look, and we'll record it, of course, and we'll save it and savor it later on as we move into 2017. Very often, this is a time to begin thinking about New Year's resolutions. We also have, of course, the transition from one administration to another in Washington, D.C. And some would say things are a little bit different this time. So in one way, it appears that life is about to become simpler. No longer will we have to listen to long presidential speeches. We can parse 140 characters and determine the policies of the United States government. So I'm wondering, which one of you would like to begin, but to think about this coming year, the impact of what has arguably been a very strange election time and transition period. The impact upon Alaska of what's happening at the highest levels of government in Washington, D.C. What do you think will be the most profound thing that we will see here? It's easy to talk about things that might happen in one department or another, but arguably we are the tail that the dog wags very often. We talk about that in terms of oil companies, and we know that oil companies have assumed what appears to be an increasing prominence and role in government. That's what I'm observing. And we have yet a very complex relationship with different aspects of government. Now, one, for example, and maybe we can start with this, the oil. The oil business is determined in part by the market price of oil. But we also know that the oil business in Alaska is determined by what other parts of the world are attracting investment in the interests of oil companies. It's said that the new proposed Secretary of State, with his strong connections to ExxonMobil and his strong connections to Russia, might just put attention of the oil industry in that direction. Where does that leave Alaska? Mark?
That is, you know, I hate to fall back on a cliche, but it surely remains to be seen. I think that there's a lot of glee. Maybe some of it is a little subdued at the prospect of a fully Republican government. The president-elect has already made it clear that he's intent on undoing a lot of regulation. As you already noted, there will be heavy influence from the oil industry. I think, you know, folks with a vested interest here to probably see opportunity in resource extraction like they have not seen in a long time, evidenced by the company that owns the Pebble claim. I heard the other day that their stock has doubled since the election. So I think there is optimism and speculation that that the resource extraction industries will start to go gangbusters. But as you also pointed out, so much of that is dependent on how things are in other parts of the world. So back to square one, it remains to be seen.
Okay. Terry.
Well, Amazon was sold out of crystal balls, so I'm sort of at a disadvantage. But, you know, I think Mark pretty much said it. I think the oil industry definitely has a lot to be gleeful from. But, I mean, when people say less regulation, do they also mean less protection? Because there is protection in regulation, and there is business certainty in regulation. And as we've seen a little bit in our own state and in our borough sometimes, you go too far one way, it doesn't serve the purpose either. So also globally, you know, globally, and I think I'm domestically, I think things will be fast and furious after the beginning of the year. I think there's a lot of people just waiting to seize the power that having both sides of Congress with the same party and the presidency holds. I think you'll see immediately a lot of executive orders that Obama has signed be the first day just to make big headlines will go away. Some of them will take longer because they're just not a stroke of a pen. But I think it'll be fast and furious. I'm keeping my eye, of course, on Medicare and Social Security because I think there's some people that voted some people in thinking those would be sacred, and I don't think they're sacred at all at this point. So that could be a heavy unwinding of the Affordable Health Care Act, and millions of Americans may lose their health insurance. So I think you'll see a lot of fast and furious, and then I think you'll start to see the political game change a little bit with who starts losing their popularity by what they do, and the repercussions of what they're going to do may come home to roost, and things may slow down to a little bit of a grind. But globally, it could have huge implications on both oil production and the way other countries treat us. And there's been some pretty frightening things going on even before inauguration being said. So buckle up, people.
Zas?
What the Secretary of State reference is a good one. I mean, I think it's we can't really tell what's going to happen. I think it's easy to assume that, you know, with a Republican government and with the statements that the president-elect has made, with the appointments he's made, that it's going to be an open-door resource economy. I think certainly there will be changes, but there are so many other factors at play, and some of the president-elect's policies may affect the resource industry in other ways. I think certainly some of the less popular Obama administration executive orders, you know, anything influencing Arctic drilling, maybe ANWR. Mm-hmm. There's a fairly recent, like a riparian protection order that Yusa Belli Coal has been sort of stridently objecting to, but it's the Chewitna project that may or may not stand to lose there. I think some rollback is to be expected, but in industries like coal, say, where the president-elect has made big promises, you know, especially to his constituents in coal producing states, that, you know, all those coal jobs are coming back. He doesn't have a lot of say in most of the factors at play in the industry right now. You know, demand for coal and mechanization. I mean, unless he's going to take the industry backwards 20 years, people are losing jobs because machines are doing their mm-hmm. jobs. So I think there are you kind of have to parse how much control the Trump administration will have. But absolutely, there'll be changes.
And I mentioned earlier the tweet effect of a tweet on nuclear policy, for example, which has produced a fascinating set of an analysis. I've read a little bit of people walk through because in the past, presidential statements have been taken as significant. They've been taken as crafted with an intention to convey message. There has been some suggestion that Mr. Trump perhaps has a message, but that it may be more of a shot from the hip, that may not be reflective of all of the concerns and pieces that go together. And so the suggestion further is that people, whether you're in Asia or Europe or in Russia, you're saying, okay, the president has said this. Now, we have built a whole understanding of what happens when a president says something. And now this guy has said this, but we also have been able to roll back and look at something that's been said, then be retracted, and so on. So one of the things that I understand in the world of foreign relations is uncertainty may play to your advantage if it's contained. But it can't go too far, because when you have uncertainty about what is meant by this or that between countries, that leads to very often a stance that says, well, we might have to take a defensive posture here and be prepared for the worst. I'm just thinking that what we're seeing still before the inauguration is a continuing campaign. It's as if the campaign season didn't end. Zaz?
Yeah, it makes you wonder whether at some point, depending on how this administration sort of functionally operates, whether world leaders will just stop taking those tweets very seriously and go to the whoever high-level officials they're dealing with directly for to figure out exactly what our policy is.
Okay. That could be. Well, let's come back to something that is significant for people living here in Alaska. We've just in the last few days had reports on, I mean, startling reports of a 40 or 50 degree temperature rise. It's essentially the North Pole arguably is melting. It's 32 degrees at the moment. People talk about perhaps going surfing at the North Pole, be the first two. This is a phenomenal change. It is, in some respects, unprecedented, and it's a reflection of some significant shifts in the way weather patterns happen. We know that the president-elect has suggested that in a variety of ways that climate change is really not either a big deal or is not being affected by the things that people do. This, even the scientists who study this are saying, we realize we were conservative when this kind of circumstance comes about and that's happening. Now, right down to it, we know that we've long looked at the Arctic and Alaska as a harbinger of what might be happening in other places. We have villages that are much concerned about what happens. And as do other people, as permafrost goes away and so on. So I'm wondering if you have a sense of what it will take, other than the change to a tropic climate in Alaska, to have people accept the fact there's been some significant change. What's your sense about this?
I know the answer to that.
Go ahead.
They have to be able to make money. Okay. It has to be a money-making endeavor. It has to outweigh the ability to ignore it. And at this point in time, it hasn't gotten that way. I mean, when we quit paying for the funding of hurricanes and national and fires and those sort of things, when the government no longer subsidizes that, basically that's what it is, to rebuild areas because of the impacts of climate. And somebody can go in and make some changes to make some profit from it, they'll get it. But until then, it's like everything else in political, you know, holding on with the political will. And that's, the people have to feel the pain first. And there are some people that are being pained by it, but the impacts aren't relevant enough in everyday life. And that is going to hinge on the monetary. When they quit getting reimbursed by FEMA, when builders quit being able to go back and rebuild everything because the government's subsidizing it, then it'll be time to look at it. That's my guess. Mark?
No, that's a really good observation. I don't fault any of that. It's a good observation. It's a cynical observation, but it's probably right on.
Okay.
Do you agree? Yeah, I mean, I think that we're kind of paying the price of scientific uncertainty, mm-hmm. that we, you know, as a nation kind of lean toward the easy answer. And, you know, there are, scientists would say it's obvious what's happening, but there are still a majority, I would think, at this point of Americans who say, well, until you can prove that my car, this flight, that coal burning plant, mm-hmm. Those things are causing the North Pole to melt, I'm not gonna change anything I'm doing, and I'm certainly not gonna. It's not fair for the government to ask companies to, you know, when other countries like India and China are. I mean, it's just you start snowballing so quickly without that smoking gun.
Yeah.
Unless it hits you in the pocket or makes you money.
Well, and also if you have political parties in charge that really are pretty cynical about science in general and when it comes to, and we've seen this sort of in our own borough when, you know, we've been fighting for fish returns and we wanted to base it more on a scientific thing and less on a, you know, who should get their fair share. It's a fight. It's, I think that's what scares me the most, I think, is that they're not really, really ready to look at the science. Nobody trusts the science behind it. And I don't see that changing by at least the appointments I've seen done so far, that they would start believing in the science and all of it. That's, I think, a bigger problem because it's not just about climate change. It's about, you know, it's about illness. It's about all kinds of things when you aren't reliant on science. And I think there's a general mistrust of science in general.
So you've mentioned money a bit here earlier, and I know in the state of Alaska we've had in the past our own waves of money flowing into the legislature, in some cases resulting in legislators losing their positions and going to jail by improperly accepting funds, so on. As the new administration in Washington starts out, there are all kinds of questions being raised about, starting with the president-elect and his holdings, moving on to all the appointments that are being made or the tentative appointments, because there's still confirmation hearings, which also involve the question of whether if you're going to be a cabinet secretary, you're going to reveal, if you happen to be a billionaire and have a rather extensive holdings, how your decisions would affect your own holdings. That's been kind of the theory all along, and that presidents didn't charge a substantial sum of money for an audience. Or the president's family didn't do that. And people have been going back and forth around this whole thing. Is that pressure now just because people in arguably the business community coming into government are really not fully understanding what they're being asked to do if they're separating their business and their governmental duties? Or do you think it's an example of the president-elect and others pushing against the old style and saying, well, that shouldn't be that way?
I'll tell you that it has been a source of concern to me that more people are not sort of demanding a little more transparency. Apparently, we're fine with letting the president-elect not show his taxes and disclose his foreign business entanglements. Now they're saying that Rex Tillerson will not be asked to produce his either. It's sort of mind-boggling to me when we've spent a large part of the last 8 years hearing demands for transparency, you know, maybe even beyond the norm from the current administration. And now suddenly all those expectations are, that's okay. We don't need to know any of that. I think we really do need to know that stuff, especially with the specter of foreign meddling in the election. And we know that these people in the administration are involved in you know, extensive international business. I think that Americans have a right to know what those interests are and how they might affect policy going forward.
So are we at a point where there are a number of dystopian views of the world that in some cases include what might be referred to as the corporatization of society, where big business is bigger than government? Are we seeing a transition of that sort where oligopolies, et cetera, and large multinational corporations really are the entities that are more effective in controlling how societies are going to operate? Because I say this because at times, we look back in history, we look back at significant changes, arguably the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution. There have been times where there have been significant changes in societies. And when you check with people or you read the history prior to those events occurring, you begin to think that not everybody saw that coming. After the fact, oh, yeah, it was pretty obvious. So I'm wondering whether we're actually reaching a point which is not just – it's a little bit like climate change. It's not just a variation, but a rather significant switch and change in the way our basic institutions will be operating. This might take – it might not happen overnight, but it could be in a year or so. And that's why I think this is a moment to look and say, are things really, really different in this transition and the incoming administration? Really different than maybe you have to go back to Andrew Jackson in the 19th century to see that.
Well, but other countries have put up with a lot more from their politicians being – not so great or not having such ethical backgrounds or guarding what they've done. I think, you know, France has had some pretty crazy presidents and, you know, political and, you know, I don't know. Maybe we're just going more like our neighbors and not being as critical about that.
Well, I mean,
I guess
it's
a good thing.
If we're speaking to the question of, you know, are we becoming a government ruled by corporations and ruled with a corporate mindset? Mm-hmm. You know, to play devil's advocate, I think that's what a lot of voters wanted. They wanted our country to be run like a business.
Well, efficient.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking more about this sort of undercurrent of, you know, government waste, you know, overspending. And if we run like, I'm putting the voter we, I guess, but why can't we run our country like Donald Trump has run his businesses? Now, obviously, Trump's financial history is fraught, and hopefully our country won't declare bankruptcy a number of times. But I think there are a lot of people in this country who want to see more efficiency, who are knee-jerk, are feeling as if the government isn't serving them. You know, we've had this conversation before at this table. And I think that, I mean, there are it'll be very interesting to see, obviously, if we are starting to be run more like a corporation, how that really pans out. Because there are a lot of other missions that a government has to serve that corporations don't and can't. You know, that it's often more expensive to protect streams and not use lead paint, for a historic example. I mean, there are limits to what corporations can do in terms of a government mandate.
So. Well, and the big difference is it's private money as opposed to public money. So,
but you get a multinational company, you know, a big one, say like ExxonMobil. These people have no use for borders or the policies, you know, the different policies from nation to nation. They're all about doing what's best for their bottom line. And that includes a lot of the talk of free trade and open borders. It's, you know, open borders for trade. I think, especially again at the multinational level, the people in charge see borders and trade policies as getting in the way, and it's kind of a double-edged sword. Back to what Zaz was saying, running things like a business is fine, and it's a good way to package things. But when you get to the dystopian, the conspiracy theorists, for example, and I'm not peddling in that, but, you know, new world order and one world government is all driven by business. And that, I think, is probably viewed favorably by multinationals like ExxonMobil, and is all the more reason why we need to see what Rex Tillerson's entanglements are.
That's a great point.
So the world is a complicated place with many different cultures, many different groups, and my understanding that the real question is something about what has been termed globalization, call it free trade across borders, open borders, etc., that allow for the interchange not only of goods but people and ideas, and that's been kind of a rallying cry for an improved world. And now, contrary to that, we have what appears to be developing in many countries a nationalistic fervor. A prominent politician in France possibly the next leader of France, has said that the borders of France are too porous, and the arrangement that allows for easy traveling. We as visitors love to go to Europe. We can go across the borders. We're not going to be stopped and held up a long time. We cross from France to Switzerland to Italy and so on. The suggestion from a number of places is that, well, that's too far. We need to protect. We need to withdraw. We need to be within our own country. And in some respects, I think the president-elect, whether he's talking about a wall or talking about Make America Great, the undertone to that is to make it separate. And so I'm wondering if, and a number of observers have suggested, that we've entered a stronger time of backlash of globalization and easy access to other people. Confounded, however, by what we have as a web across the world, the internet, the World Wide Web, which seems to be able to find holes through a lot of countries' borders in one way or the other, as many people with different ideas and so on are able to communicate. How that plays out, because that's a different thing, never has the technology provided that kind of person-to-person communication that we have. So I'm thinking there's a big question mark, but a question mark that, in my mind, that suggests that we're entering a period of incredible turbulence as people try to figure out something that they had taken for sort of granted, a statement by the president or a situation with oil. But when you have less assurance about the predictive value of prices or the value of the money in your pocket or whatever, people get to be a little bit, I think, wary and fearful. So I'm going to suggest this next year is going to be really, really interesting times, as the Chinese would say. So as we finish up here, we have a moment or two. Any last comments or summary statements from the three of you? Zaz, how about you first?
I hope everybody has a happy and safe holidays. That's all I'm gonna give out.
I like that. Okay, Terry.
Oh, I'm just gonna ditto that, because we all just need to have a little happiness here at the end of the year. I'm ready for a new year. It was 2016 has left its mark.
Okay.
And yeah, Mark? I'll ditto that too and add a little hope for the new year. You know, hopefully a lot of the hand wringing we're seeing now will prove to be unnecessary, and, you know, we'll be living in a better place in a year.
Okay.
We can at least hope.
Yes. Yes, we can do that. Well, I want to thank the three of you for being here for the last edition of Valley Edition in 2016. We'll be back in 2017 to see what has happened as the new year has begun. So take care out there.